Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome you today to On Point. I'm Don Allen, and in Studio A sits Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good afternoon, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Oh, fine, Mr. Allen, and a good day to you here on a...
Thank you.
Kind of cool day, but not too cool here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Well, Don, what do we have? A lot of tension in our city. For our national and international listeners, need to be advised that there are racial tensions in the city behind a couple of issues, education and employment, significant employment. There are some forecasts that are being made with respect that we could have some real problems here this summer. I'm talking in terms of confrontations and et cetera. Won't go into any names at this point, Mr. Allen, but a shootout in South Minneapolis last night.
Yes,
two individuals shot and wounded, one very critical. In fact, he's on life support. Bullet went straight through his head. So came out the back. Just a terrible situation, if you will, two young men attacked by a gunman, if you will. So we continue to have a level of violence and gun battles in the streets here that proportionally puts us right up there with Chicago and some other places around the country. But anyways, what do we got, Don?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, and also we want to throw in there and let people know Michael Broadcorp, you know, who was in the scandal with the affair with Amy Cook there in the state legislature.
Yes, in critical condition.
Amy Cook. And he is still in the hospital. They said he might have been drinking. It takes 2 weeks for them to get the results back from
toxicity test. Yes.
So
he was depressed, huh?
Yeah. Must have been. Uh-huh. Poor guy. Just let it all get to him. And so, And as you said, Mr. Edwards, there's a lot going on. Especially, I know some of you have tuned in because on Facebook, the title of the show today was "How the Minnesota Human Rights Commissioner Got Punked." We'll explain that in a little bit. Some of you are tuned in because of the Washburn Baby Gate, and we're going to get on that momentarily. And the others might be tuned in to listen to how the Republican Party must come to the rescue of Minnesota against the DFL. So we appreciate all you that tuned in for whatever reason you tuned in. I'm sure you'll benefit from this particular show. And just to remind you, our calling number is 347-426-3904. Toll-free numbers, 877-537-2878, and the phone lines are open.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's get it. Don, this Washburn situation, a lot of polarization here in our beloved Shangri-La. Tensions are extremely high. School district is involved in its traditional cover-up. White parents prevailed and carried the day, by the way, and this goes back to within hours after this incident happened on a Friday when parents of the four individuals. Oh, by the way, we're being told by sources that the four individuals, including the leader, if you will, of the hanging of a black doll depicting a black baby here in Minnesota and Minneapolis, at Minneapolis Washburn, that they have been returned to school.
Yes.
I'm kind of puzzled by the ringleader, who was expelled. Expulsions, you have to have a formal hearing with public, if you will, though you can ask for it to be closed. But I'm unmade to understand that they're back in the schools. But in the meanwhile, the question that is kind of festering right now is the quietness of our civil rights leadership, both professional and volunteer, if you will, Not an utterance from the commissioner of the Stadium Rights Department, nothing from Velma Corvell of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, nothing from the mayor, which has a lot of people talking. We've had situations here in which white citizens have been the victims of incidents and circumstances and et cetera. The mayor has been there on point and et cetera. And we've not heard anything from the mayor's office after this very brazen, outrageous, racist act at Minneapolis Washburn. So I think it's important that we let folks know that even though the mayor is lame duck, he decided he wasn't going to be able to win a fourth term, not after his exhibition as it pertains to the Viking Stadium. But anyways, Washburn, a lot of different stories coming out. I'm hearing some kind of puzzling things from leaders, if you will, who say they're on top of the educational piece, saying that the youngsters should not be punished. They should be almost exonerated. But it's the white parents, Don. It started with their denunciation of the letter that was sent with the students on that Friday. They maintain that language referring to racial incident, racial animus, and et cetera, was unacceptable. And some of that played out in the so-called briefing, if you will. Steve Brandt of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, educational reporter, Don did something real interesting. It kind of surprised me, though I clearly knew about it, and we'll talk in terms of the exact time and et cetera. But he pointed out that the meeting that night, for those of you that were in attendance and et cetera, that was all pre-rehearsed.
Oh, yes, it was.
That earlier in the day, starting around 9 o'clock of that morning, specialists, representatives of the school district, particularly their human resources department, et cetera, came in and, kind of pre-qualified the right students. If there was a list that indicated what students would be highlighted, if you will, and what students who should be watched, if you will. Contrary to what people thought, there were a lot of security forces present at the school, a lot of undercover officers, if you will, because of the threat by neo-Nazis out of Faribault, Minnesota. Let me just do this quickly, Don, unless we have a call coming in. First of all, there was a announcement by the principal. She said she did not take any action until the following Wednesday. That's really not true. And when she finally did on Wednesday, five days later at approximately 3:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, she sent out an electronic letter indicating that an incident had happened a number of days before. By that time, the white parents had organized, and I think organized very effectively. I mean, I have to be right up front with you. Their organization was extremely effective, and the district's ability to basically shut down African-American civil rights leadership here, I think, was classic. I think it was classic. Should be put in every Ku Klux Klansman's textbook, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But what has basically happened as it pertains to this textbook exhibition, if you will, activity, is that we are basically being told that the matter needs to be put to rest, that everything is in order. Many students maintaining that they had no idea that there was anything such as lynching in America, that there had been any abuse of Negroes, or that Negroes had any even been in something called slavery. And so that raises the question, Mr. Allen, where in the heck has all the money gone that we spent in this school district for education, particularly in the area of history, particularly in ethnic and cultural history? How do you have so many students? And then, by the way, there were some African-American students that were saying the same thing in support of their white colleagues. How do you have history deployed, if you will, within this school system? And you saw youngsters, and Mr. Allen, by the way, was at that meeting, and youngsters standing up and saying that they don't understand what all the concern is about, and then their parents and supporters saying also the same thing, that, you know, black people and particularly black parents who spoke up on this were just way out of pocket.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And Mr. Edwards, you've been following, I mean, announcing the chronological order of what's happened, but also, you know, we have to look at the reaction of the Minneapolis Public Schools Communications Department with a electronic communique dated January 18th, 2013 at approximately about 3:56 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
It says they're having this meeting, and I'll read the paragraph, to address last week's incident and promote discussion and healing. Minneapolis Public Schools is working with community partners such as Isaiah, a Minneapolis nonprofit that brings groups together collectively to address racial and economic equity in Minnesota to facilitate deeper conversation. So, and I read that how it was written, and I had to add two words to it because it wasn't a complete sentence. But when I was there, Mr. Edwards, I went up to one of the facilitators that was explaining what the kids were going to do before it started, and I said, can I speak to the representative from Isaiah?
There
was none. They said, Isaiah is not part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that kind of set me back. And, of course, I interviewed three parents. One of the parents was the one that Esme Murphy, I think she's a Channel 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Channel 4, that's correct.
Yeah, interviewed a couple minutes before that. And they are totally set in saying that there's not a problem, that WASP, they don't want Washburn to have a bad reputation. This is a great school. So what you said was absolutely correct about how those parents organized and put out the information. But there's also a flip side to this, Mr. Edwards. You just mentioned it a couple seconds ago about the education within the school. One of the problems and challenges with the Minneapolis Public Schools, they are not culturally competent when they're teaching critical thinking or African-American history, or for that matter, British history or any other type of history.
Mm-hmm.
So those black children's interlocking arms with their white fellow students there walking into the auditorium, those hand-picked students, let me say, they don't really know any better, and I'm not necessarily letting them off the hook, the students that did it off the hook. But I'm saying if you have a school district that per Minnesota Compass, organization with inside of the Wilder Foundation, tell you that Minneapolis or Minnesota has the worst graduation rate for students of color in the country out of all 50 states, and that the achievement gap is much huger than reported to us, then you understand that this particular school district, especially Minneapolis Public Schools, is not doing due diligence in teaching the kids. And we can see this, Mr. Edwards, as an outgrowth of these kids that go to MCTC, that go to the University of Minnesota, that go to other Minscu colleges and private colleges. They don't survive to the midterm of the first semester of their first year of college.
Because, well, Mr. Allen, you can also see it, and we've talked about it, and people are told to be silent. You can see it in the test scores.
Yes.
You know, the test scores, unfortunately, are a very early indicator of academic failure, unfortunately.
Yes.
And the test scores of African Americans here in the Twin Cities, is in the Minneapolis Public School District, is just a disaster. In fact, I've just always wondered why the governor and the commissioner of education have began to really have serious discussions about placing the Minneapolis School District in receivership, as they can do under Minnesota law. I mean, it's just outrageous, particularly when you talk about the amount of money and the kind of salaries that are being paid, but the kind of money that, first of all, the district receives, the kind of salaries that their top administrators. Oh, by the way, on that particular note, the number two person in the Minneapolis Public Schools, he's not a doctor, but Colonel Miles, our United States Armed Forces, is leaving. He's taking a position as superintendent in Florida.
Wow.
And they were trying to suppress that information because Colonel Mills was specifically brought here to kind of augment and prop up current Superintendent Johnson. But the assistant superintendent, associate superintendent, whatever his title is leaving the district.
Ms. Harris, let's go to the phone lines. It looks like we have a call.
All right.
You're live on the air on Point. Mass, who's calling?
Yeah, I'm just listening today.
Yes.
We couldn't hear you. What'd you say, sir?
Well, I'm listening in the queue.
Okay, I'll put you back in the queue.
Oh, it's in the queue.
Yeah.
Well, those people in the queue, but they don't want to. Okay.
Yeah.
That is something that should be of concern to the stakeholders as it pertains to education in the city of Minneapolis, that really the man who is really the day-to-day operations officer of the Minneapolis Public Schools is getting out of here, you know, bailing out.
Same guy they brought in to prop up, like you said, Superintendent Johnson, but also to deal with the Negro leadership in those schools. And the irony of this is, Mr. Edwards, that most of the failing schools in the Minneapolis public school system have black names. Lucy Lane.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
One of the great disasters, by the way, and we cannot let this go by because of the controversy and tension, racial tension, is the Green Central, named after the first African-American superintendent, Dr. Richard Green. The things that are going on at Green Central, and we reported on it in our newspaper columns and on our television program, is just unbelievable up there at Green Central. And there is a significant level of hostility now growing between African-American and Mexican, Latino parents and et cetera. And it's wild up there. There are basically no black teachers left, by the way, at Green Central.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are only actually two teachers.
Well, and also speaking of the Minnesota Society of Professional Journalists, it's MNSPJ.org, they disagree with the Minneapolis Public Schools District decision not to publicly release the results of the disciplinary actions against students involved in this racially motivated event at Washburn. And so they've publicly demanded that the school district release this information. Now, the Minnesota Society of Professional Journalists is basically a white organization. And, and they are, you know, kind of interested because, you know, some of their actual journalists and board of directors are people that, you know, work from any mainstream television station to any mainstream newspaper. And I think they felt restricted by the communications department at the Minneapolis Public Schools that really does not get you any information on time or by a deadline. So they would have
absolutely, as well as total misrepresentations by the director of communication, the same man that initially said there was not a meeting of the site committee 5 days after the event, and then continued to put out very well questionable information in the role as communications director, along with other staff of the communications department. You just cannot get the right story from this district about what's happened. But we'll put it like this: the unofficial information now that's coming out, like from parents and activists and et cetera, is that this thing has pretty much been pushed under the rug. Okay. It's been taken care of, that leadership, black leadership groups have agreed to remain mute, if you will. And so they're expecting to begin to use terms like we're putting this behind us. But let me indicate this question that maybe our listening audience needs to give some consideration for. Both you and I, in separate situations, were listening and were standing there live as some of the students were being asked different questions. And one of the questions Mr. Allen and I found to be very interesting in these separate observations was that the students never could explain why the dial was in play in the first place. Initially, I heard that someone had brought it from home. Then we heard it came out of the prop room and it was going to be a part of a quote-unquote play representing either Black History or MLK. When you ask the question, and this was one of the talking points, by the way, that was being discussed the morning of the meeting, and that was if any question is asked about why the little dial, black dial, was in play, just ignore it and move on to something else. In other words, actions of diversion. No one has been able to explain where the Tao came from and why the Tao was even in proximity to the school, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Mr. Allen is an investigator. That's an important question, because if you're talking about that there was not malice and forethought with respect to this incident, and as one parent said, and obviously she's a lady that graduated from Washburn around 1972-73, she talked about, and she's absolutely correct, the racial conflict and riots and fighting they had inside of Washburn as early as 1972 and 73 between black and whites over issues of race. So it's not like Washburn has not had a long history and experience of these kinds of activities. But the whitewash is in, Mr. Allen, you know what I mean? So maybe we'll move on to something else. No calls on this particular situation. But it appears that it's going to be taken care of, and that the African-American leadership here in the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota. Reason I use the state, Mr. Allen, is because I find it just very interesting that neither the Commissioner of Human Rights for the state of Minnesota, an appointed official of the governor, or the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department appointed by the Democratic mayor, both Democrats, governor and mayor, have not said a single mumbling word about this incident, which is causing great polarization here in our beautiful Shangri-La.
Yeah, exactly. And if we could just spend a couple minutes here. We have no press conference or press releases from, I'll start at the top, the Council on Black Minnesotans, the Minneapolis Urban League, the NAACP, Sabathian Community Center, and any other African-American-led or flagship organization in the state.
Well, what about, let's see now, the African-American Alliance under under Mr. Cunningham, the Black Ministerial Alliance under whoever is involved there. We've had nothing from them, correct?
Nothing. Not
the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission that this community fought hard for 40 years ago. Nothing from the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, who has statutory authority to call public hearings, by the way. Nothing from them, correct?
Not a thing. Not a whisper.
Okay. All right, then. Well, what the heck. I guess that's what it's all about, suppressing and enforcing, get this now, enforcing silence.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, very. So that was that. This whole turn of the events. I mean, there's an undercurrent out there. Oh, Mr. Edwards, we have a call.
Oh, let's
go to the
call.
Go to the phone lines.
Mm-hmm.
You're live on the air. Master's calling.
Gentlemen, what's happening? I just was able to chime in to the show. I just caught it at the exact right time about any press releases or any community forums as a result to the recent Washburn meeting that was definitely not reflective of the whole community and student and parent population of, in relationship to the Washburn tragedy. So wanted to just give you some information in regards to that.
Go ahead. What's the information?
All right. So I think we talked last time I called. There was a press conference, actually, by an organization that formed as a result of this, Parents and Community Advocating for Social and Educational Justice.
Mm-hmm.
There was a press conference, newspaper, Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, that was covered by the Star Tribune and multiple other outlets, where there was identified a 7-point list of demands in relationship as a result of this particular event. Now, if time is, I can go over those demands that was covered, or I can just and I will have the press release sent to you by the time the show ends.
Okay, why don't you link it to us, and also the 7 points. We are aware that there was some reporting by a reporter by the name of Steve Brandt about the press conference at the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, the oldest black newspaper in the state. Yeah, fax that or, electronically send that over to us, and certainly we will make sure it's relinked around the country.
Okay, and then we'll do our part on this end, too. But I would like to say, though, there will be a actual auditorium community forum about this at Sabathany Community Center in their auditorium, and it will be broadcasted live on KMOJ radio, the People Station. That was secured over the weekend. And there will be specific invitations to Minneapolis Public Schools officials, city, county, and state government, with the emphasis on the Minnesota Department of Education. And there will be a panel discussion with also those representatives from those particular governing bodies, with students, parents, and community members, and an open forum dialogue at the end of this community event. So this is designed for transparency that needs to happen in relationship to the issues. The Minnesota State Board of Journalists recently had a press release.
Let me ask you real quick, sir, on this. Who is on that panel for the community?
You know what? Directly we're identifying. We're going to be having a couple of meetings between today and Monday to get the list together. But I talked to yourself and Mr. Edwards. I mean, this is open for everybody, especially those who have been advocating around the issues of quality public education, specifically for our African-American children. So we plan to have a really nice mix of representation on that particular panel. Like I said, we haven't identified the specific names of yet, but it's going to be reflective of the community voice.
Let me explain the problem. I mean, it's not a problem. I shouldn't call it a problem. But let me explain the process that I have a challenge with.
Okay. In relationship to what?
Just any panel in the black community. And I'll be really honest with you. I mean, I know that in good faith effort, you're doing what you need to do. And I know you, so I know that you go follow through. But as you know, what happens is we get these powder puff type of events and panels in our community where they get the people who get along with a certain political party or a certain politician or a certain...
No. None of this is going to be... This is not the role model of how we're getting down with our situation.
Okay.
This is going to be a conversation for and about the people, done by the people. Many times our parents, more specifically our African-American parents, and our low-income African-American parents, to be more specific, 70% of the Minneapolis public school represents that population. We're talked for. We're talked to. But we're rarely in a position where we facilitate the conversation about the issues that are pertinent to us. And I think that one thing that's going to be different about this particular event is that this is from the people on out. And so I think you'll notice a different tone of everything. But structurally, to have a good conversation where it's organized and it's based on a list of expectations to follow through, not just to have a venting session, and I'm not saying that we don't need that either. But I think there's some specific things that we need to do as a community to follow through with some specific goals and some specific expectations for the better quality of our children's safety, number one, but also so that we can have a safe environment to have a better quality of education. So,
okay. All right, 100%.
Okay. All right, we'll be looking for that information from you, and we'll continue to make sure this is put out in the public arena.
And I look forward to seeing your brothers there as members of the black media that's been very vocal about this issue. I'll give a big up to the spokesman for being on the scene, but we need more black writers. So if anybody's interested in, for our black newspaper that have weekly publications, definitely need more writing staff so we can have more stories in our weekly. Just put to see you guys there, the black media as well, to cover our issues.
All right, thank you, sir. Okay, take care. All right, caller was breaking up just a tad there. He was talking in terms of the importance of some of the black journalists that write and et cetera. We as a columnist for the Spokesman Recorder have been for a long time. We're always interested in that too.
Yeah.
Because we have not been seeing any reflections well, to the degree that we would have thought that it would have happened. Have to remember, just a week ago today on this same program, this last caller called and gave us some detailed information and et cetera. And last Saturday, the issue was already a week old. So we're now into day, actually, Mr. Allen, we're into day 14. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
On my calendar, we're into day 14 of this tragedy, racial animus here in the city of Minneapolis involving the Minneapolis Public School District and others. So that in itself is interesting. I know where my colleague, Mr. Allen, was going with respect to we really need to hear from those that get the big salaries. Oops.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I'd like to throw in about this situation, when you're talking about either education in Minneapolis public schools, be it the black children, the white children, or the other children of color, or you're talking about politics, the center of gravity is different as it pertains to us, black children. And
right.
And we cannot expect that center of gravity to change with an issue like this. It's not. It will never pull our weight. We'll never be the sun at this point and suck everything into us because our center of gravity is so large. Just because of the things that are out there,
we call it a nova in a black hole.
Yeah. It's a black hole. It's for real.
Thank you,
Mr.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Well, we've got to move on to some things, Mr. Allen, next big issue, and it's being shown on YouTube across the country and et cetera. It has to do with the revealing this past Thursday in the Halsey Hall room, by the way. Many of you don't know the history of Halsey Hall, and I won't bother to go into it. Sports broadcaster and columnist and et cetera here in the Twin Cities for 50 years. But in the meeting, you people, were basically told, first of all, there was a great amount of attempted restriction of questions, though it was supposed to be a public meeting, actually ordered by the chair of the facilities authority and the powers invested in that authority and invested in her directly as chair of the authority, a personally appointed statutorily by Governor Mark Dayton. It was an ugly situation, and my colleague there over there in Studio B, Mr. Allen, has a couple of minutes of the dialogue that took place between he and I and two public officials, well paid, by the way, who were extremely hostile to the questions we asked, yet in the final analysis, and this now brings us to Commissioner Kevin Lindsay, who I got to say, Mr. Allen, you were correct. I mean, I don't always agree with my conservative brother, but was pumped.
He was pumped hard.
Yeah, when it was revealed that there will be no percentage as it pertains to African Americans on this site, that the 32% is not to be a guaranteed reflection of African-American participation. Now, I know that some of you out there are like, oh, no, that couldn't be. Well, Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards have it on video and tape and et cetera. It was the doggonedest, element of conversation and historical. It was very historical because the question specifically came up, what will be the percentage of African-Americans within the 32% that had been touted by the Commissioner of the Human Rights Department, by Velma Corbell, the Director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, by Wanda Kilpatrick, the Affirmative Action Officer for the Metro County, and man, you know, the room got real quiet, didn't it, Mr. Allen, when they said, oh, no, there will be no goals within the 32% for African Americans. Now, this goes back to the Michael Jordan doctrine. It's not Michael Jordan, the ball player, but Michael Jordan, the city's affirmative action, or excuse me, civil rights director, seven, eight years ago, who said, you know, the policy we're developing here in Minneapolis is that we can, quote unquote, meet a goal and never hire a black person.
Exactly.
That's what he said.
One of the things, too, Mr. Edwards, in that room, even before that, you know, we have a football New York Jet legend, Ezell Jones, in the room, and
Giant. I think he was a New York Giant.
Giant, yes. Then he has, you know, he's a businessman, and he's a public figure also, and so we can discuss this openly. And he's around six or seven white women, contractors, there to work on their, you know, and I, you know, he was in mixed company, but I wanted to ask him, which I will do, is how come you don't have any black female contractors down there?
Yeah.
What's the problem with that? You know,
because there aren't any, and those that did exist maybe 5 or 6 years ago were basically forced out of business. And there's one particular young lady by the name of Johnson, and Mrs. Johnson, in fact, I wrote about this 3 years ago, that she was being forced out. In fact, Velma Corvell had just come aboard as director of the Civil Rights Department and played a significant role in suspending this woman's right to acquire contracts and et cetera. And I have to say, Mr. Allen, for any calls that may come in, Mr. Allen has on tape Velma Corvell's
yes.
And she's a veteran herself, veteran of the United
yes.
States Navy, according to her bio. Velma Corvell said, and I'm going to have to break this now, Mr. Allen, to you. Velma Corvell said there is no veterans preference. There will be no veterans preference by law on anything pertaining to the goals and workforce obligations of the city of Minneapolis, because that's allegedly what they're going to use, which was a disaster. I could not believe, Mr. Allen, that she told that kind of lie, made that kind of misrepresentation in a public meeting in which we were discussing opportunities and et cetera. I realized when I listened to her, I knew what she was doing, and what she was doing is that, first of all, there is veterans preference, Mr. Allen, in the city of Minneapolis, and in fact, there is a tremendous controversy which is actually being suppressed by the mayor's office and others. That has to do with the fact that there has been a significant erosion and contravention of veterans' preference and enforceable goals pertaining to both the fire and the police department. And what amazed me when she sat there and said that to you, the list, the hiring list for the Minneapolis Fire Department, which will begin hiring here in our beloved city in about 35 days, all of the top African Americans in the first 30 positions were all eliminated by a change formula as it pertains to veterans' preference.
Mm.
Also, the list as it pertains to African American police officers has also been altered, and all African Americans on the initial list, both promotion, I'm sorry, Mr. Allen, we also have a list for both promotions and hires. That list has been altered, if you will, and there will be no African Americans hired in the Minneapolis Police Department over the next 3 or 4 years. There will be none hired based on the revision, word I use, of the fire department's hiring list as well as promotional list, probably for the next at least 5 years.
Wow.
And I could not believe. Now, I have just been in consultation and was, in fact, approached as the former monitor for the federal court here in Minnesota for, Minneapolis, actually, for 21 years on behalf of the federal court on the fire department. You know, I told them, unfortunately, their problem is they have no standing right now with the federal court because there is no current consent decree, and that absent that they were going to have to find an attorney and sue. I don't know if the black firefighters have that kind of money, but they were wiped out. The
yeah.
highest ranking black on the list was pushed down to number 11 and ultimately will be pushed totally off the list. And the first 10 hires are all white and all male, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And I wonder how a city council that is, you know, has a significant number of white females, I wonder how the city council feels about that.
Yeah, I agree. So should we play that conversation?
Yes, let's play that. Let's play that. We're on for an hour and a half today. Is that correct,
yes,
Mr. Allen?
Yes,
so there's
yes.
plenty of time. Yeah, play. Let's play it. Let's
play this. Okay, here we go. Tell me the
that there is no veterans preference for the Viking Stadium for the workforce. Is that correct?
There is no veterans preference in our legislation for the Viking Stadium. That does not mean that we are not working towards something that would include our veterans from the state of Minnesota.
And so if the city of Minneapolis, don't they have veterans preference, Ms. Corbell, at all?
No.
So the city of Minneapolis doesn't have veterans preference either?
Same answer. We don't have specifically in the ordinance anything specifically pertaining to inclusion of veterans, but we do include programmatically veterans in our purchasing and procurement program.
Programmatically, what does that mean?
That means there's nothing in the ordinance that talks about it, but we include veterans in our purchasing.
Okay. And on another thing I wanted to ask, Appendix E, workforce good faith efforts. Who will be enforcing the good faith efforts?
The authority will be enforcing the good faith efforts to the contractor.
Thank you.
Now you, Mr. Edwards.
Well, I would hope so.
Oh, well, thank you.
So, all of those things...
Ms. Jones, I'm asking him.
He's not part of us.
Why, certainly he is. He just got up and talked in terms of the Great Minds meeting.
Vote for the Great Minds.
Yeah, he was at the Great Minds meeting. He talked in terms specifically and with specificity. Oh, they wanted to move. Oh, okay. Well, I'll still ask you the question as they say that. What does the legislation say relevant to the legal standing of the acceptance or the rejection of the lowest bid? I mean, general counsel should, or whatever he is.
Again,
Madam, I'm merely asking a question. Well, I know there's no relevance. I know there's no relevance in the minds of some. Excuse me, we can't talk over each other. This gentleman
asked. Well, that's why I was asking.
Well, but you were not properly phrasing the question I asked of this gentleman, who made a statement relevant to what it started because of Mr. Jones's question, which was an excellent one, with respect to how you're going to deal with the legislation and the intent of the legislation with respect to zones, if you will, zip codes, poverty, and et cetera. He made a statement, spent exactly a minute and a half talking in terms of the bidding process and the bonding process. And my question merely was, Madam, what does the statute say with regards to the acceptance or the rejection of the lowest bid?
Again, I'm going to tell you.
You're
going to
tell me.
This is all about the equity plan. The equity plan does not address the lowest bid and have the question that you asked.
Oh, okay. There it is again. Thank you.
Any other questions about what we did at the Great Minds meeting?
Mr. Edwards.
Yes, sir.
I got a huge problem with a black woman talking to any other black person like they got a tail. Okay.
Yeah. But both these women have a reputation of having done that while serving in positions of public authority and responsibility and drawing a public salary. They're legendary in doing that. In fact, Velma Corbell was really so hostile in that meeting that I think if she'd had a weapon, we may have had a Newtown, Connecticut, with respect to some adults. I mean, these folks are outraged. Let me say this, Mr. Allen. You heard significant misrepresentation and outright lies. Now, you heard Velma Corbell support the position of Wanda Kirkpatrick, who is an employee of the Metropolitan Council, indicate that there is no veterans preference in the legislation and et cetera. That is a total misrepresentation, and I would suggest to anybody that wants to be a naysayer or anyone who is seeking the truth, contact the president, a man by the name of Rutger. Contact the president of the African American Firefighters Association and contact high-ranking black officers of the Black Police Officers Association. I could not believe when Corbell told you that veterans preference is not in the legislation of the city of Minneapolis, but then went further to say that it is not reflected in the statutory requirements of the legislation that was passed. They became so hostile but yet upset with the questions that Mr. Allen and I were posing that they just started lying. okay? Only problem is they're not a bunch of private citizens standing around on a corner or being in a bar somewhere. They are representing a municipality and a sub-agency of the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, you know, I was talking to a community stakeholder this morning about that, who kind of had a good position on that, like yourself, and have been around here for a long time, have seen this nonsense and this surliness out of Corbell and Ms. Kirkpatrick. So, Mr. Tucker.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Mr. Tucker is a community stakeholder in North Minneapolis, and he's got his call here real quick. And I just wanted to, he actually saw the video, Mr. Edwards, and just kind of broke it down a little bit. And we were just wondering if he'd care to share a little bit, you know, within reason with us here today.
Well,
yes,
quickly,
Mr. Tucker,
here.
Welcome. Go right ahead. Yeah.
Quickly here, one of the biggest problems that I have, and it's troubling, is that we have a lot of people who want to come in from the suburbs and try to assist or help the indigenous black community. And not only do they not have the knowledge of the system, they don't have the intestinal fortitude to really be an effective force for our community. I mean, us poor people who live in North Minneapolis and live in these indigenous and poor sections of this city. The problem that I have, they have not took the time to avail themselves of the correct information. And it's really disheartening. It reminds me of the statements that Benjamin Hooks made this statement, and he made it a lot. And the past president of the Urban League, Whitney Young, uh-huh, made it. And Roy Wilkins, all three of those guys made a statement. He said, if you want to goof up something, just give it to the middle-class blacks, and they will goof it up. All three of them made that statement, and I think that's true. They didn't say goof it up. They were a little more basic than that.
Yes.
But we're in a public domain, and we want to keep this set up.
They made reference to something called a sexual exercise.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Tucker.
Well, you know, for instance, we take a look at all these organizations. I don't know why, if they have such contempt and disdain for the African-American community, why do they choose to work in the community? And why do you choose to do a job and do it halfway?
Yes.
And that's troubling. I asked Mr. Allen this morning, did he understand the role of the community development agency? And he said he wasn't familiar with it. The Community Development Agency in the city of Minneapolis and in St. Paul is designed to assist African Americans in their business endeavor. Uh-huh. I asked him, and I've been asking other community stakeholders, and names I won't mention, I said, how many employees is your company hiring this summer? And I've asked this question to several spokespersons in our community. And they said, well, I don't have a company. Well, how can you help me? You're going to the powers that be, white America, say, give me some money to train some black people to work in your white companies. And as George Show said, we got enough managers. We need some business people. We need somebody who can establish businesses. We need some entrepreneurs. We don't have any in our community, and that's the biggest problem we have. Corvell may be a nice lady, and several others may be nice people, but they're not business people. They are not business people, and the only thing they seem to run is their mouth. And most of the information in which they sprout out of there is untrue. And that's our problem. They do not know enough about the system to be able to go into the room and ask the salient question. They don't know what to ask for in the room. They
Mr.
don't
Tucker,
know.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You know, I asked them about when they was building the Twin Stadium. Says, what did you go in and ask for? Some of them wanted jobs. Everybody, every other nonprofit in the city went in the room and asked for some carts. and be able to sell some pop, hot dogs or something in the stadium.
The concession stands. Mm-hmm.
The concession stands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They didn't know anything about business, so they didn't know what to ask for when they got in the room.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They didn't ask for an endowment
mm-hmm.
that would keep them going for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
These people do not understand business.
Mm-hmm.
Romney, I don't like his 47% statement, but we only have 5% of any community that's going to be business orientated, and we need to find the business people. And I know Ron for a number of years. He shook a lot of trees. The fruit goes to the tree shaker. It don't go to the people who come in the room or come in the ground and pick up the fruit.
That's right.
That's old English law.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an untrue statement. If Ron and Don is shaking the tree, then the fruit belongs to them. It doesn't belong to these people who go into the room and pick up the fruit. And the powers to be understand if we want to thwart an endeavor, all we got to do is put somebody in the room who don't understand the endeavor.
That's correct, Mr. Tucker. That's what we saw Thursday night in the Halsey Hall room at the Metrodome Stadium in downtown Minneapolis. That is an excellent observation. Go right ahead, sir.
They don't know what to ask for. And I say this, and I don't want to be risque in saying this. The only room that some of those people know what to ask for is the bedroom.
Absolutely.
And there's not a lot of choices in there.
Until
we can develop an entrepreneurial class, our status will always be what it is. We cannot hope to achieve parity in the United States of America if we do not understand business.
Yes, and you've been saying that, Brother Tucker, for a long time. You're absolutely correct. Yes.
If we had a meeting with Barack Obama today, what would you ask him for?
Yeah. What would they ask him for? You're right.
What would they ask him for?
Yeah.
And what would they ask him for when they go in the room with him? Well, we want you to be more assertive on civil rights. Civil rights, yeah, okay. What does that entail?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You know, we had this lady that worked for the Wanda Kilpatrick. Nice lady. But when they, a couple of years ago, they had an event in one of the hotels downtown, this lady came behind the podium and did a buck dance.
Yeah, she sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Get a buck dance. And then the person who brought in the civil rights director for the Department of Transportation, they squared him out of the meeting.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Squared him out of the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I don't expect, and even some of our council people do not believe that African Americans should be in business.
That's absolutely correct. You can tell that by the lack of contracts that they give. Oops. All right, Mr. Tucker, we appreciate it. Anything else?
No, that's it. But I keep in mind what Benjamin Hooks, Roy Wilkins, and Whitney Young said. If you want to goof up something, put a middle-class black in there.
All right. Mm. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And by the way, for our listening audience, both domestically and internationally, Mr. Tucker is a professional businessman. He is a well-known extremely qualified appraiser and et cetera, been involved with business activities. There used to be a time, Mr. Allen, because you're much younger than us, there used to be a time when we did have some entrepreneur presence in this city, and it was up until and prior to urban renewal
mm-hmm.
in 1952, if you will. We had a very flourishing in both cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, entrepreneurial presence, existence, if you will, businesses and et cetera. In fact, at one point in time, you know, though the population was only about 6,000 in each city, almost half of the Negro population was you know, employed by Negro businesses and companies and et cetera, okay? that was all lost. It's been lost slowly. I mean, it's been so tragic, but it has, as Mr. Tucker said, it has been lost to the extent that Mr. Allen, we need to get that figure out, Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen was at a conference yesterday.
Yes, yes.
He will explain for his own decision what this was really about. But a piece of information came out that was just, it was criminal. It was criminal. Mr. Allen, go right ahead. This needs to get out.
Yeah. Yesterday I attended the 2013 NCORE National Conference on Race and Equity. It was their annual winter conference at Hamline University in St. Paul. And it was part of my commitment to continue personal and professional development on issues of racial justice and participation. And so there's an organization I mentioned earlier in the show. The organization is actually called MN Compass or Minnesota Compass. Their URL is www.mncompass.org. And so I was shocked, Mr. Edwards, because I've always, you know, politically motivated, you know, I know that we have to have a national self-interest in equity, okay? And we have to make sure that, you know, we get ours. But the lady threw up a chart on the
screen. Now, this was the chart. She just didn't open her mouth, run her mouth. She brought empirical data. Go right ahead.
Okay, and this was data that she's done, and it's actually from 1966 to 2010. And again, they're within the they're over there in the Wilder Foundation off University in Lexington, and I will have the PowerPoint and post that on Monday morning on my site. Between 1966 and 2010, white wealth, okay, went up in Minnesota. This is Minnesota. Plus 88%, okay? White wealth in Minnesota from 1966 to 2010 went up plus 88%. Now, from that same time, again, 1966-2010, black wealth sunk to minus 3%.
I want folks to understand that from other places around the country, this great liberal enclave, black wealth in this state over a period of 40 years or thereabouts, decreased by 3%, while white wealth improved by, is it 88% to 89%? Is that correct, Mr.
Edwards? Mr. Edwards, we have a call from the East Coast.
Oh, let's get it. Okay.
Are you live on the air, sir?
Thank you. Thank you. This is B.A. calling you from Maryland, and it's great to hear you gentlemen this afternoon, and your last caller, Mr. Tucker, was superb, and we need a lot more Mr. Tuckers throughout the country to keep us on track. Man,
yes,
he was
sir.
Spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Across this country, you have African-Americans in positions of leadership, a quote-unquote influence, who simply don't know what they're doing, who have no... I mean, we have a quote-unquote black chamber of commerce, right?
Oh, scary, yes.
Yes.
And you would think they will be concerned with having black businesses be more assertive and take over markets here in Maryland, considering that blacks are a third of the population and these are educated, money, government-working blacks.
Mm-hmm.
No, what they do is that they provide cover. They run interference for the Chamber of Commerce. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
their job is not to establish a presence for black business like the Koreans do, the East Indians do, the Arab state. That's not what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what? And you try to explain to black people, I don't, sometimes, do we want to do the work? Do we want to be successful? And I just want to say on a national level, because I realize that not everybody knows the nuts and bolts and the nitty-gritty of what goes on in our local communities, although, you know, we could probably relate. But let me just say on a national level, President Obama, he in his first term and in his second term, he made Reverend Al Sharpton
mm-hmm.
his point man in the black community. That's why I hear people say that President Obama doesn't have a black agenda and all that stuff. I say, y'all, you're not paying attention. You're just not paying attention. Whenever Reverend Al has a conference, he has the Secretary of Labor, Health and Human Services, Education, the Attorney General, you name it. They're all on a speed dial.
Mm-hmm.
And if Al says, I need you to come host a gala so I can charge $100 a plate or whatever to raise money, they're there for him. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Reverend Al ain't going to ask them for nothing. Okay? President Obama made Reverend Al the point man in terms of education in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done. The problem with that, as Mr. Tucker said, I don't have a problem with Reverend Al. It's just that Reverend Al doesn't know anything about education. Nothing.
Yeah.
Correct.
Nothing. He knows nothing about education.
Right. Exactly.
And he's not listening and not surrounding himself with anybody who knows something about education.
Okay.
And how are we going to make any? So that's 4 years we wasted.
Mm-hmm.
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's no accountability. How you gonna make progress? The man had $5 billion. The Secretary of Education had $5 billion of non-discretionary funds in his pockets that the Congress gave to him. Reverend Al is on the man's right hand, is in his ear,
mm-hmm.
and the African American community doesn't get a nickel of that $5 billion.
That's correct. You're absolutely correct.
I mean,
sir.
That's just that. On a national scale, I realize. But I mean, sometimes, I go like Mr. Tucker, and I see this locally, man. Locally, people running business groups, trade groups, who know nothing about business.
Absolutely.
Know nothing. People who are made superintendents of schools, who really know nothing about education,
mm-hmm.
who know nothing about. Making people productive.
Well, welcome to Minneapolis. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That is the truth.
Our caller left?
No, he's still there. Is that all, sir?
Yeah. That's all I wanted to touch on. I was just so enthused to hear Mr. Tucker speaking and listen to people who are because typically. When I go into a meeting, and I say, we need to establish more black businesses, more even black franchises.
Yeah. Okay.
What I hear coming from our elected officials is no. What we want to do is convince, say, for example, a large supermarket chain. I'm not going to name them. We need to get a large supermarket chain to invest in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to somehow try and get the real estate and
yes.
convince them to buy the real estate from us, at a large markup, or convince them to do business with a contractor of ours. That's how we're going to make it.
Right.
Okay. We're not going to make it by running the whole, do it like the Koreans do with the hair care thing, or the East Indians do with the liquor business, or like the Koreans or the Chaldean do with the grocery store chains. We don't want to run anything from the noodle to the tutor. Okay, we want to root to the tutor. We want to convince large mainstream. White corporations to come in and invest. And I said, okay. But typically when that happens, they come in, they buy out any initial black partnerships that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
They buy them out within 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They buy them out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, there's no black participation in these projects, and they take all the profit and that's what you have. And it's around the country. In Detroit, Michigan, they had blacks who were going to get involved in the casino business. And
oops.
they turned in the casino business.
Yes.
And
they made
the casinos give a third of their businesses to African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
and the casinos did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before the casinos were up and going, the blacks had sold out their shares in the casinos back to the major casino players.
Wow.
And nobody said a thing.
Right.
And that's typically that's black business for you. That's mm-hmm. where we're at.
Right. All right.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It, sir. And stay tuned because I'm going to give an example of something that is done by another racial group in the area of casinos that they know what the heck they're doing. Appreciate your call out of Maryland, sir. All right.
Yeah.
Stalin, let us remind ourselves, because this also ties with the Viking Stadium, heck of a point made by our caller out of Maryland. The only group that has positioned itself, and if you notice, there wasn't any presence of them the other night. They didn't have to be. The Native Americans, particularly using one of the largest Native American casinos in the United States, the Manawakan Tribes Casino at Mystic Lake, as well as the Chippewa White Earth Band in White Earth, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
second largest casino here. It's interesting to hear him say that. Number one of the things that they never allowed to have happen was that they lost at any point in time their ownership, partnership, and et cetera, in these Native American casinos, and we have some very profitable ones here.
Yes.
But one of the things they did on the Viking Stadium, they met quietly for 6 months with the stadium authority, or in this case the facilities authority, worked out an arrangement and have their firm in Lakeville, Minnesota, positioned. This firm in Lakeville, Star Tribune wouldn't touch it, by the way, has been the sole constructor of casinos here in Minnesota. They are positioned to be a sub-prime contractor on the Viking Stadium.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the joke that's been told in some of the meetings is when the issue comes up about black participation, the statement that's basically made is just give them enough money for a Cadillac.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And so the scholar out of Maryland, there is a specific racial group here, Native Americans, who have taken care of their business, and they have protected their interest, and by extension, Mr. Allen, they have protected their people and their legacy. We haven't done that here, brother.
No. No, we haven't. And, you know, and that comes back from the stigma, the stereotype back when President Ronald Reagan was president,
mm-hmm.
and he talked about the lady that got in her white Cadillac and drove to the grocery store and brought the best steak they could possibly buy, and, you know, everybody in their mind, because of race, racism, and culture, just assume that it was a black woman, you know?
Yes.
And so Reagan didn't even have to say that, who it was, okay? And so with that said, you know, that's one thing, Mr. Harris, we had a production meeting a while back about this, you know? The Native American, I love my Native American brothers because they pulled it together. They actually have something to offer. They're not sitting there with their tongues and their hands out and their pockets wide open and a sad look on their face like you're trying to get a candy bar and you ain't got
absolutely.
Nobody.
Absolutely.
They said, come to our casinos. We are proud people.
Uh-huh.
We will put you up for the night and take care of you.
Uh-huh.
And so they did. Those people went up there. You know, they gambled. They had nice dinners. They sat there.
Why, certainly. They got $3,000 or $4,000
yeah.
worth of chips to gamble with during
yeah.
the evening. Certainly.
And where's the Urban League going to take them? To the corner store?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
they screwed it.
That's definitely what is in play. A couple of other things. We don't seem to have any calls, but we were hoping to really generate some reflection. I guess people are like, oh, man. Another piece on the Viking Stadium. One of the things that was said by the attorney representing one of the law firms, local law firms for the Facilities Authority, He made a statement, Mr. Allen, about the fact that one of the other provisions that will clearly stop the African Americans from even getting a sniff, and I now stand by my figure of 1 to 1.5% will be the best that the African Americans can expect out of the stadium, both by contract and by employment numbers. But one of the things that happened is there is a provision in the legislation under construction and design, that clearly indicates that you, in this project here in Minnesota, that you have to be invited to submit a proposal.
Yes.
And you remember we were told by the general counsel that the construction management firm, which will be selected on the morning of February 1st here in our city to preside over the $753 million contract for the building of the stadium. Remember he told us
that there was
no specific provision as it pertains to, nor was there any by invitation, and that didn't exist. It does.
Yes. Yeah.
It does. And it is in that section of the provision, if you will. I really would call upon the facilities authority to discharge that lawyer.
Yes.
Because what he's doing is taking money under false pretense. Oops.
Yeah.
Mr. Allen has that exchange on video.
Yeah.
But it was an outrageous declaration by him as a practicing attorney. And again, I would call upon the Sports Facility Authority to remove this man. Now, Mr. Allen, I want to also save this for you.
Okay.
They made the statement that there was no veterans preference. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And then we played that?
Yes, we played that. Yes, you are correct.
Mr. Allen, I have to inform you, sir, that under the provisions of House File 2958, which created the legislation to build this quote-unquote people statement, I refer you to page 8 of the Veterans Affairs and Veterans Service document authored and passed by the Minnesota legislature with respect to serving our very fine military personnel who have served this country with distinction, in some cases losing their life. I was extremely puzzled by the fact that there would be a statement that talked in terms of no veterans preference and et cetera. Okay, I mean, I was just so disappointed, Mr. Allen, that this statement was being made because it was a part of what was tied in to the legislation. Her direct quote was, "There is no provision for veterans and veterans consideration." Is that correct?
Yes, that was her statement.
Yeah. Well, somebody's going to have to explain something to you veterans and to the Veterans Administration and et cetera. Because there is legislation, there is language that talks in terms of veterans affairs and inclusion and et cetera. Also, to the attorney for a law firm that is just ripping off the citizens, and I will do it like this, Mr. Allen. Under Section 15, 473J.11, Stadium Design and Construction, in the matter pertaining to the selection of the construction manager, which will take place at 9 a.m. on the morning of the 1st of February and then be announced a couple days later. At page 11 of the 68-page document, at lines 15.34 through 16.220, is specific language that indicated clearly that the pre-qualification and other qualifications would have to be in place before the bids were requested and before the contract to select a construction manager to handle $753 million of construction money alone of the citizens of this state, including African Americans, who, contrary to what people think, do pay. That specific language is in this document that we have in our files here in Studio A.
Wow. Yeah, so she's full of...
In fact, let me read this very quickly, so we have enough time, because we're going for the half hour, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have 4:30.
The authority and the NFL team may pre-qualify offerors by issuing a request for qualification in advance, Mr. Allen, of the request for proposals and select a short list of responsible offers prior to discussion and evaluation. Under E, as provided in the request for proposals, the authority and the NFL team may conduct discussions and negotiations with responsible offers in order to determine which proposal is most advantageous to the authority and the NFL team, and to negotiate the terms of an agreement. In conducting discussions, there shall be no disclosure of any information, and et cetera. And it goes on at line 16.2 all the way through 17.20. Now, were we not told that the in the selection of the construction manager that there was no specific requirements that talked in terms of the right to be able to even bid?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, they weren't there to tell us anything that is in the legislation. And you heard by the tenor of Juana Kirkpatrick and Velma Corville's voice. I mean, you obviously, Mr. Edwards, have the information right in front of you. But we're supposed to be stupid. We're supposed to play stupid because, you know, they're not going to answer those type of questions. And I'm frustrated at this point because while you were talking to me, I'm over here in the studio, and I just looked up the veterans preference in Minnesota for public employment.
Uh-huh.
Hell, and it says, hell yeah, that there's veterans preference on the Minnesota Viking Stadium.
That's right, Mr. Allen.
You know, and so why would she even, and in the city of Minneapolis?
Because we did not have any documents in front of us, and of course, you know my reputation, a long reputation about having excellent recall. Let me just do this, though, because we're talking about information and providing information to our citizens and across the country to let them know how corrupt things are here. One of the other issues that came up in which we were told that we were incorrect and et cetera, okay, is that for work the construction manager or program manager determines to be critical to the completed schedule, awarding contracts on the basis of competitive proposals or performing work with its own forces without soliciting competitive bid, if the construction manager or program manager provides evidence of competitive pricing, okay, it then goes on to talk in terms that the lowest bid will not necessarily be that which prevails.
Yes.
Now, we asked that question.
What is
the standing legally of the lowest possible of the lowest bid submitted? The Minnesota Legislative Act clearly indicates that we don't have to take the lowest bid.
Yeah.
Okay.
They can be their friend. You know, the lowest bid in this case is not going to win.
That's right.
Period. And they can take the high. You know, whoever, you know how Mr. Tucker just made a good point about business. But part of the things in business, I know if I'm going to buy an advertising schedule with Clear Channel or one of these other agencies here in town,
mm-hmm.
The first thing I look at, I don't mean to sound cheesy, Mr. Edwards, but which of them invite me out to the dinner? Who gives me the Timberwolf tickets? Who gives me the free movie passes? Who takes me to my favorite place, the Monte Carlo, and really makes me feel like they're going to work well with the money I'm spending and make me feel like a man? So yeah, it's a game. And Juana Kirkpatrick once told me in 2008 that she wished she had the position that Mary Prescott has at MnDOT in civil rights. And she says, and I said, well, why? She says, well, because MnDOT has their hands in the prime contractors' pockets all the time. She told me that point blank in 2008 in a meeting when I sat there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wow, that's pretty interesting. But the thing is, you know, they make up all these little, we're going to have a great minds meeting, we'll do this. I mean, who are these great minds?
I'm absolutely puzzled. And would like to see a list of the great minds. I'd like to see that list delivered to the Facilities Authority Commission, five individuals, two appointed by the city of Minneapolis, three appointed by the state of Minnesota, and the chair as a part of that three appointed directly by the governor of the state. I'd like to see the list, the names of the great minds, and what was really discussed, okay? Because clearly, none of what needed to be known and what was a public hearing that was ordered by the Sports Facility Authority took place in that room. Now, I don't know what happened at the 8 to 10 meeting earlier that morning,
mm-hmm.
but I doubt if it was anything like the one Thursday night because there wasn't anybody like us at the one on Thursday morning.
And, Mr. Edwards, we have a call. Let's go to the phone line.
Oh, let's get the call. Let's get the call.
You're live on air. We're talking about the Viking Stadium and that debacle with the meeting the other night. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I just love independent media. I just I'm liking to hear this conversation, but I'm just a little bit confused about the topic because when I tuned in, I saw the promotions for today's show. It was like the Washburn High School baby gate. So I was I wanted to know, number one, the advocacy around the Viking Stadium. I understand that's definitely something that needs to be done because it represents a huge amount of money, resources that could possibly come into the community, more specifically in the business community. But I do also recognize that the Minneapolis Public Schools is almost a $1 billion entity in itself.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've just been listening to the show, and it seems to be primarily about the Viking Stadium.
Oh, no.
Sir. No,
the first 30 minutes of this program, we talked about Washburn and the Board of Education and the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Yeah,
I might have to catch it on the rewind then. Don't you guys rewind
what's called
the show
on demand? That's right, sir.
On demand.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey,
yeah.
Mr. Allen, did you get the? Because you know, I caught it when you guys were talking about voices being suppressed.
Yes.
Did you get the email with the press release?
Yes, I did get that, but I just wanted to explain something to you, guest on the phone here. When we do this stuff, you know, the headline on Thursday or on Thursday morning was, you know, the circumstances surrounding the Babygate controversy at Washburn. But there are several different things going on in our community. So there are several different titles to this show because we covered about 8 or 9 different topics from business to the we can't ask questions, the blockage, the DFL blockage of information. The Republican Party must rescue all Minnesotans from the DFL, and that's the economic piece that we're talking about. And so, yeah, we did go back to the podcast, same URL. It will be up about less than a minute after we get done today, and you can listen clearly to the whole show.
Okay, I was just a little confused because you know I try to be on attentive to the issue, so I'll listen to the beginning of the show in its entirety. But that's interesting because you're having difficulty getting transparent information. Then I assume listening to the conversation with the Viking Stadium and the public officials, and it seems to be very consistent. So I mean, excellent independent media.
It's part of a political party here in Minnesota that, you know, they want to be everybody's friends, and they don't feel they should give anybody any information, and that's how they crush leadership, new leadership, and old leadership, and just run with the status quo, the same old, doing the same thing.
With the advocacy that you're doing or attending these public meetings around the Viking Stadium, are you noticing that the community, or maybe the community that represents industry around construction and things of that nature, you think there have been contracts to kind of silence any kind of challenges?
No, you know, that is one heck of a question, and that's what's so sad, at least in some corrupt enclaves, you know, Chicago's and places like that. At least the brothers are getting at least enough of a piece of money to be able to play the role of Tammany Hall politics. The only money that these folks are getting, and we started out also talking about that at probably the 35-minute mark of today's program, the only money they're getting is personal money for their
personal
own personal
money. What do you mean
pockets.
Like personal money? Sir?
Well, you know, in other words, 60, 70, 80,000, okay, for some quote-unquote project that they may say they're involved in. For those that maintain that they are training, because I think that's a question in the back of your mind, they are talking, there's only really probably one of them left, and that's OIC. They're being told that, you know, there could be a couple hundred thousand that would go to their organization. How you use it is your business. But I remind you, this is a $1 billion stadium, and the amount of money that has already been designated by law for the construction is $753 million. I've been doing and studying this for a long time. My prediction in my columns, my last two columns in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, based on what I've seen, and yes, I've been at many of the meetings, is that the African-American community can expect at best 1% to 1.5% in construction dollars. That would be about $750,000. And we already know who that will go to. Okay?
Yeah, but let me just interject something. Mr. Edwards, you remember our meeting at with the commission there, the authority?
Well, the chairperson and Ted Mondale.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, out of that number, if you do the math, which I've been playing with a calculator, that's about 112, 115 jobs. And that's it. But didn't we tell them that in the beginning?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just let me ask one last question. Just like in a public school conversation, are there any trusted community stakeholders in the construction conversation, specifically in the African-American community, or
Not in my estimation. What we're dealing with are the usual suspects.
Yeah. Yeah, and also we have to look at that. One thing that our community is not getting, especially those that are contractors that might have a legitimate business with the state, they are purposely at the Minnesota Vikings sport and the Sports Authority not sending out notices for these meetings. Has confirmed by me on Thursday night at that meeting. I asked him, I says, well, you know, there wasn't a press release sent out, so how does the community find out? You know, if you don't make any this public knowledge, who are you inviting? Because you're not inviting the community of color, Hispanics, Asians, the blacks, contractors. And so they're just having a meeting, but yet you have about 18, 19 people in a room that we've never seen before, with the exception of Zell Jones and Mel Reeves.
Well, Mel Reeves and Wanda and what you call it. But go ahead.
Yeah, and so with that said, it's all by design, as far as I'm concerned, because they're slacking. And who in the neighborhood or in the community, all communities, including the white communities, because let's play fair here. Let's keep it real. If the blacks aren't working, the middle class blue collar folks in Minnesota that manage them aren't working either. So you have two significant special interest groups that are.
Well, but let me just clear something on that, though.
Okay.
The legislation did take care of the Caucasian population because in the legislation it says that 25%, and this is interesting, 25% of workforce, 25% of materials and et cetera, 25% of supplies and et cetera, 25% of that particular category will go to quote-unquote Minnesotans. That's why it's so disturbing that when we asked the question, sir, in the meeting Thursday night, what will be the percentage within the so-called 32% workforce goal of employment of African Americans? And it was clearly told and enunciated that there is no category for African Americans.
Yes.
In other words, if we feel the 32%. With Asians and Russians and et cetera, that we've met our legal responsibility of minorities.
Well, I would just co-sign what Mr. Tucker said earlier, and this is a principle that's applied to any institution when you're navigating around, you know, the needed advocacy that needs to happen. I mean, documentation and awareness of that system is extremely important. So whether it be in the construction field or in public schools or in a situation of high security safety where a black baby was lynched. I mean, you have to know your policies, you have to know your laws, and you have to know how to, you know, communicate that to the community. So, once again, I'm just – independent media is beautiful. I'll let y'all close out the show.
All right, then. All right, my brother. Take care.
Keep on doing it. All right.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Allen, we're coming down to the last about 6 minutes. Any observations? Where do you see some of this playing out?
Well, we have about 60 seconds left, and we're just gonna probably have to come back next week and investigate this some more and just see the turn of events that happened here since this program, and encourage people who are listening to send it to your friends to listen to.
Absolutely.
So with that, we'll be back same time next week, 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Mr. Edwards,
take care. Be strong. Bye-bye.
We shall overcome.